This is Driven by Data, the podcast.
Welcome back to another season of Driven by Data, the podcast. Powered by Orbition Group and hosted by me, Kyle Winterbottom. We are delighted to bring you season four of Driven by Data, the podcast, and our aim remains exactly the same: to bring you some of the most respected and recognized thought leadership figures from the world of data analytics to share their knowledge, ideas, use cases, and insights across how they've tackled some of the industry's most trending topics and challenges. All that's left to say is sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Welcome to Driven by Data, the podcast, season four. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Simon Ferreter, who is the CEO of Anmut. So, Simon, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Carl. Lovely to see you. Lovely to speak to you.
Yep, as always. So, look, where we always start, Simon, is by asking our guests to give themselves a brief introduction into their background and journey to date up until this point in time, if you would be so kind.
Yeah, sure. No problem. So, I guess... context. I've always been fascinated by what motivates people to behave the way they do, how leaders and teams make decisions, and the idea that if you can measure something, then you've got a chance of managing it better. So that's a bit of my sort of psychology around data that I'm sure we'll unpack as we have a conversation. I spent the first 17, 18 years of my career at one of the big four, had some amazing opportunities to work with all sorts of different businesses, different industries, from lots of different functional perspectives as well. So my views on the world of data and what you can do with data are very much colored by that experience, and are grounded in things like business performance improvement, cost and risk management, digital transformation. That's really my sort of core behind that. The connection back to data would be I'd have been a terrible business consultant without good data. My clients were always complaining that they didn't have the right data and they needed more data or more insightful data. And I think probably a pattern that a lot of your guests and audience have seen of technology implementations failing to deliver the benefits that they perhaps promised. And a lot of that time, it's due to the data gap not being addressed adequately. So I suppose to spare you the full CV, Herman and Andy co-founded Anmut in 2018. And having worked with both of them in the mid-2000s when, business intelligence and big data were the buzzwords then, a bit like AI today, perhaps. I worked with them back then and decided during one of the pandemic lockdowns, actually, that I wanted a change of scenery, joined Anmut to grow the consulting services side of our business. And then sadly and suddenly at the start of last year, Herman passed away. I was asked to step in as the interim and then the permanent CEO. And really here I am today, very much every day a school day, but very grateful that we've got thriving business, great team, wonderful clients. So hopefully that's a bit about me.
Yep, nice. Thank you very much. Yeah, obviously I had the pleasure to meet Herman several years ago now, and obviously subsequently work with him alongside yourself and get to know a lot more about your business. And a true gent and absolute tragedy. I know he was, fondly admired by everyone in the industry, so an absolute shame. But I guess for the benefits of anybody that don't know kind of the Anmut story and journey, just give us a bit more kind of insight into, you know, who you are, what you do, the challenges that you're trying to solve, for whom, etc.
Yeah, sure. So what we do is provide organizations with an approach and a tool set. I describe it as systematically measuring both the value and the fitness for purpose of their most important data. And the reason we do that is to really establish a basis for prioritizing where capital needs to be allocated to really close that gap between the data that decision makers have today and the data that they really need to achieve their goals. Why is that a problem? Let me sort of describe the problem that we see. I suppose despite the growth in the data that we all see in the world today and the billions invested in technology to run our businesses and public services, leaders, and there are plenty of reports out there that I can point to, leaders still report that there's a huge gap between the comprehensiveness of the data that they receive today and the data that they really need to execute their strategies. And so some of the symptoms of that include not really understanding which data is most important to medium and long-term success. Data is often poorly understood by non-technical people, and data teams often lack some of the management disciplines, perhaps, and the language and the business intelligence to really communicate data effectively to the rest of the organization. And so consequently, we see data not being managed in the same way as perhaps other valuable resources and assets are in a business. And that's the thing that ends up hampering transformation efforts. It creates duplicated effort across the organization, inefficiencies, and ultimately puts goals at risk. So our argument is really to convert that data from being a black hole and a sunk cost into something that can really drive value for organizations. And to do that, you have to treat data as a valued and valuable asset, which requires you to identify the data that's important to your strategy and the objectives that it depends on, measuring the impact that the data has on those outcomes, and really prioritizing where to invest in your data and your data management capabilities to have that impact. So that's in a 90-second, two-minute summary, what we do, who we do it for.
Yep, nice. Thank you for that. So, yeah, I mean, look, as I said before, obviously had the pleasure of, you know, being involved, playing a very, very small part in the Anmut journey so far, and obviously being on the inside of your office and, you know, met a lot of your team and so on and so forth. So I kind of, it makes complete sense to me. You know, I understand what you do, the problem that you're trying to solve. I find it interesting. I find it utterly fascinating, but I also understand that the concept of what you believe in and the challenge that you're trying to address and how you're approaching it is probably hugely misunderstood, right? In terms of, and I guess there's, you know, probably down to a semantics around language of the term value. And I put, you know, quotation marks up here on the screen, right? Because people use that in different contexts, and I probably think that that has some bearing on the misunderstanding of what we're referring to when we talk about that. So just set the scene then, because you're talking here about managing data like an asset, like any other asset. So asset management, right, really, in its kind of purest form, but data being the asset and the valuation of data, like you would have the valuation of an office building or something similar. Just set the scene then. So what does that, how does that kind of transpire in your conversations around data valuation, I guess, you know, how it's understood, perceived, you know, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, really, really great point. And if I may be a bit cheeky and sort of ask a question back to you in order to answer the question you asked me, what is data valuation? Would you say that data is important to running your business?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think most people would agree that decision makers are dependent on fit for purpose data to do a whole array of things, be that innovating services, be that finding productivity gaps, improving your healthcare patient outcomes, adapting to climate change if you're a policymaker in government, and so on. And a lot of our surveys gave exactly the same answer that you gave. Business leaders are saying 91% are agreeing that data is very important to how they run their business. So my second question to you would be, do you think that all the data you collect, store, and use is equally important?
No, of course not.
Yeah. So I haven't found irrefutable proof for this yet, but my hypothesis is that the 80-20 rule kicks in somewhere along the lines here, and 80% of business value perhaps been generated from 20% of the data that a business has. And this is where things get a little bit complicated with data valuation. Because how important something is or how much something is worth to someone depends on who you ask and what they want to do with it. So in other words, data valuation is very context dependent, and it's that context that actually determines what the most suitable method for valuing data really is. Would it be worth me outlining headlines what some of the methods are that are out there?
Yeah, I think that'd be really useful. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm sure many people will be familiar with Doug Laney's book on Infonomics. And in there, you'll find three financial methods for valuing data. There's cost value, which effectively evaluates the data's worth based on things like production, storage, replacement cost, and also impact if you were to lose or the data was stolen. The second approach is around market value, which benchmarks actual price paid or compares an asset with a similar traded asset. So that sort of leans towards monetization. I'll go there in a minute in terms of what the differences are here. And the third area is around economic value. So that assesses the impact data has on business outcomes and ultimately bottom line contribution. So that's very similar to valuing a use case. It's sort of the utility method within economics. And of course, no good consultancy would be worth its salt if it didn't invent its own. So we've devised a fourth method, which is a stakeholder-centric approach, which really incorporates the broader social value of data, which means that it includes environmental and community impact of an organization's activities. And that's also considered as part of the economic value modeling that we do around the data. And what all of those methods are ultimately doing is putting a monetary value on the data. And one of the best reasons to put a pound or a dollar sign on the data asset is because humans, you know, society, we're all socialized to believe money is a measure of value. And that creates a very simple common denominator to be able to compare and contrast relative value. So back to the data point, not all data is equal. Well, knowing which one is more important, more valuable, then helps you to prioritize where you place your investment and so on. So I'll wrap it up with data valuation isn't the same as data monetization. It's a logical precursor to selling or buying data. But I suspect that that's where some of the confusion comes from. But what we actually see it is, or see it as, is a means to achieve better management and decision outcomes, both about how you manage the portfolio of data assets, but also how you model the data and how it's impacting the business outcomes in a language that the business understands. And that's really the key unlock in what we do.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, so, and I'll jump into this in a second, but I think, you know, the fact that the semantics around the language and the fact that there's so much inferred meaning that of difference, right, around the same types of words. It's even the same with monetization, right? You know, so you sit in a room and say, so, you know, I've done this at our events, right? You know, so
yeah.
the topic's on data monetization. And in my mind, using data and I guess the, you know, driving top line revenue from a data initiative by, you know, making improving business performance in some way, shape or form, you're more likely to get more out of that than you are from productizing, packaging and selling a data set, right, as an example. But straight away, you know, you can see them conversations in the around those tables just take, you know, a right and left turn immediately, because people are talking, using the same word to talk about different things. And I think it's the same with value. I guess, you know, partly from my passion and fascination around this topic, Simon, I've conducted several, you know, LinkedIn polls on this subject, just more out of curiosity of, you know, what do people understand this to be? Is it kind of something that they're grasping? What do they believe in, et cetera, et cetera? And I think that the overwhelming response to the majority of those polls lead me to believe that many people do believe it's possible that you can put a value on data in terms of it being a, you know, like any other asset. So that is possible. And I think, you know, the majority do believe that. It seems that obviously very few have done it or know how it could or should be done. And I often hear things like, that's definitely the way the industry is heading, but we're not quite there yet, or that's something that's going to be a futuristic type of thing. And then, you know, I think where a lot of the maybe confusion comes in is people might believe it can happen. They might not know how to do it. But then there's also this group that kind of says, well, why would you do that? Like, what's the purpose of putting a tangible figure on the data that's sat in that lake, as an example? Why would we need to put a value on that as opposed to just use it and drive some, you know, I guess benefits as we would describe it, right, out of that kind of data project. So, but for data leaders and business leaders, then what are the, you know, what are the benefits to for a business or an organization to know that data set, data asset, well, however you want to describe it, is worth X?
Yeah, really, really important point here. Interesting how you phrased the question, because we're seeing quite a few instances where perhaps boards are going to chief data officers, heads of data analytics, and saying, we've got a data asset. Tell me what the value of is it? What the value of it is? And we would argue there isn't one single data asset that's just sat there waiting to be valued. Like there's a treasure chest somewhere that can be unlocked, and ta-da, there's lots of goodies in there. An organization usually has multiple data assets, which individually or in combination are relied upon to or relied upon by various parts of the organization to get stuff done, which in turn creates and protects the value for different stakeholders. And yes, you can aggregate these together and present the total value of all the data assets as a single number, and maybe as a percentage of your market capitalization, or as a proportion, or a comparison against your tangible asset book value. What that does is it helps you to raise awareness at all levels in the business that when we say data is important, we can now actually quantify just how important it is in a language that people recognize, which is back to that pounds and pence moment. And I would say that the primary benefit of the valuation exercise for a business isn't actually the absolute pound value result. It's that process of modeling and creating a line of sight between where and how value is created in the business, the activities that are driving that, and which data assets those activities are dependent on. And that's really the secret sauce here, because understanding that model, leaders can then identify opportunities to change the way things are done, what they're doing, how they're doing it, who they're doing it for, and the amount of value that that creates. So I'm going to borrow or steal with pride here Davin's National Highways example here to bring it to life a bit. He sometimes refers to the ability to improve the flow of traffic on roads by providing better journey information to road users. And you know, the estimations are that can increase the capacity of the network, the road network, by around 10%, probably at a cost of, I don't know, 20, 30, 50 million pounds, compared to spending, say, billions of pounds and many years building a new stretch of road, an extension to the highway that adds an equivalent amount of capacity. So just by knowing which data can unlock different opportunities then helps you perhaps redirect your capital in different ways that you hadn't previously explored. So I think that's the real business benefit to that. And then I think more specifically for data leaders, because I think there are different benefits there, knowing that relative value of different data assets can then help with that prioritization exercise. I think data leaders are probably swamped with requests from the business, kind of inbound demand, you know, help me fix my data, not working, I need a better dashboard, all the usual sort of stuff. And there's a risk that you can go chasing a long tail of lower value data that isn't really impacting business outcomes and driving the business forward. So by being able to have the conversation with the business in a way that shows them the value of the data in monetary terms and connecting it back to those activities that the business really cares about and understands. They don't talk data, they don't understand the data, but they do understand the processes that they operate and yes, some of the technology that they use. But it becomes more meaningful and tangible to them. So it no longer becomes the CDO's problem to fix. It can really encourage that cooperation across different functional boundaries, which I know is a pain point that I hear lots of CDOs talk about. I'm accountable for fixing data, and that just can't be true.
Interesting, right? Yeah. So basically, what we're talking about here is by putting the value on it is one thing, but it's then what the ripple effect of that, right? You know, to say, well, I don't know if our tangible asset, you know, whatever, our buildings are worth X or our roads are worth Y and our data is worth Z. It kind of allows you to almost kind of proportion how important it is in the grand scheme of your business. And then obviously the follow through of that is, well, you know, not all data is created equally, and there will be certain data assets that you have in your business that drive certain activities that are more valuable in terms of the activity in of itself, right? We got that right?
Exactly. You said it far more eloquently than I did. My only build on that is the, I think we've seen it, I think Davin talks about it again, is the capturing the attention of the board and making it a board level issue. At the moment, I think it's usually seen as a risk and a problem that needs to be solved. And there's historically been an underinvestment in the data management capabilities, probably an overinvestment in the technology side of it, underinvestment in the data management capabilities. But if you can go to the board armed with a big pound sign or dollar sign, and say, well, are we really spending this amount of money or this little money looking after an asset that is potentially worth this much to our organization? I think it changes the dynamic in the conversation.
Yeah, almost a little bit like some of these big businesses that have, you know, hundreds of offices around the world and pay how many hundreds of millions of pounds or dollars for it, and then, you know, not cleaning it or maintaining it, right? I guess a kind of similar analogy.
The analogies with the physical assets do work quite well for certain organizations and industries who recognize the asset management disciplines.
Which kind of leads quite nicely then, because my next question was going to be, who is this for? I guess, is there a level of maturity? Are there certain sectors that it seems more applicable to for whatever reason? You know, is there kind of any insight you can shed there?
Yeah, I hope, but of course I would say this, that it's applicable to as many industries as possible. And I think that the fundamental ideas are, we've worked across multiple industries. So we've worked with large pharmaceuticals, a medical devices manufacturer, obviously National Highways is sort of the marquee account the credential that we often talk about. But at the moment, we're also working with an automotive manufacturer and even a professional services firm, which is an interesting dynamic, consultant to consultant. But the point is, the problem statements that I was referring to earlier seem to be fairly universal across industries. What we found is that we have to fine tune the method and the approach and the language that we use to help solve them. But I think where we see the biggest return on strategic data asset management as a concept is really in the larger, more complex, non-digital native. So they, you know, they're sort of industrial manufacturing, think those sorts of large organizations where perhaps data and analytics maturity is perhaps towards the lower end and would benefit from an assessment of what data is most important, the maturity of that data, predominantly because I think a lot of those types of organizations might not be aware of even what data assets they've got and depend on, nor how it's impacting strategic goals. And I'm making sweeping generalizations here, but I think, you know, the heavy asset industries haven't historically invested in digital. They're now investing in digital, and now they're coming, you know, kind of getting to grips with how it all works. So yeah, I think that's a high priority area for certainly UK economy, and I imagine other geographies as well.
Yeah, I mean, that if you think about it very logically, that makes sense, right? Because I guess big businesses that are very physical asset heavy are used to managing their business as
Duff.
Such, yeah. Our planes, our fleet of planes are worth X to this business, or, you know, that is the value of that asset or whatever the case may be, which makes a lot of sense. Okay, fair enough. Why do you think then, is this just a maturity thing in terms of the concept itself, or is there a reason in your eyes as to why more organizations aren't already doing this? You know, are there things that prevent or stop organizations from kind of, you know, thinking about things this way?
Oh yeah, we risk getting into a deep sort of human nature and psychology debate here potentially. So stop me if I go on, but I do think it's in part due to human nature to draw that distinction between assets that we can see and feel and those that we can't. So when we talk about tangible and intangible assets, the tangible assets are the physical things. They can often be liquidated. They can be sold pretty quickly, and therefore the cash value is pretty easy to calculate. I can buy and sell the laptop that I'm talking to you through today, but working out the value of the data that's on the laptop is far more complex because of the multiple uses of it and so on. And I think because intangible assets can't be seen, and the valuation and the financial analysis methods that we're using to put a pound value on them are more complex, I think there's a tendency to pay less attention to those intangible assets and consequently undervalue them potentially. Again, it's a bit of human nature. I'm no psychologist or behavioral economist, but I think that resonates. And I think there's also an added layer of complexity around intangible assets, that some of them stand by themselves and can generate cash flows, such as copyrights, trademarks, licenses. And there are some intangible assets such as brand name, corporate reputation that they contribute collectively to value. You know, the business owns them, but they're more difficult to isolate and value independently of everything else that's going on in a business. And then the most elusive intangibles are those that have the potential to generate cash flows in the future, but might not be right now. And I think that's where a lot of data assets sit. You know, it's seen as something that is untapped value, and therefore it's difficult to make it more tangible for people. My final little part of the monologue would be, I think our accounting standards and systems don't help us here as well. You know, they were largely designed in the era of intangible assets were really dominating the balance sheets and really drove the market capitalization of big businesses. So our capital allocation processes and the accounting systems we use are very much geared towards that industrial and manufacturing era rather than the information and AI era. And I would sort of promote our approach to strategic data asset management as being one of the things that can move us closer towards a different way of measuring the value of these sorts of assets.
That makes sense. I mean, I think that last point in particular, obviously, you know, the world has just moved on, right? You know, just dramatically since, you know, those normal kind of accounting type of standards were written. I mean, and just for the audience's kind of knowledge here, obviously we keep referring to Davin, which is Davin Crowley-Sweet, from who's the CDO of National Highways, season 3, episode 1, I think still the most listened to episode of all time, which is good for you and Amut, Simon, I guess. But I think one of the things that he said, we talked around this about, you know, the accounting standards. And one of the things that he said that kind of made me laugh was, he said, you know, why when I look at my balance sheet, do I know more about my office furniture than I do about my, you know, our data? And obviously we all know that the data is far more valuable, but just being able to kind of, you know, put a tangible on what that is obviously very difficult. So yeah, that's interesting. One thing I do want to touch upon, because I guess, and this is probably just my, you know, awful communication style around this topic, but I guess because of the, you know, confusion, misinterpretation, the varying use of the word value, when I talk about this topic to other people, I often end up finding myself saying, you know, talking about like a balance sheet, as in like, you know, so that people understand that I'm not talking about like, you know, the benefit of a project in terms of, you know, the uplift of, I don't know, you know, whatever top line, but I'm actually talking about how you put a value on the data as an asset, just so that it clicks with them. Okay, right, we're talking about something tangible, physical type of thing here, which then obviously leads into a conversation around, well, I don't think we'll ever get data on the balance sheet. And then I have to, you know, I find myself backtracking and this type of stuff. So I guess it's almost used as an example, but then it kind of creates this whole other debate, which I guess was kind of unintentional, really. So I guess just to put the record straight, really, for more than anything else, like, you know, when that conversation's going on, is it possible, is it plausible, and I guess for the avoidance of doubt, are you and Amut suggesting that we'll get to a world where data will be or needs to be a balance sheet asset?
I worried you wouldn't go here. Look, I can make a case for it and against it. There are very good reasons to do it, and there are also some, because of the complexities that we've just spoken about, some difficulties in doing it as well. So excuse me for a moment while I break out into accounting language. I'm not a trained accountant, though I did have to go through my paces at KPMG back in the day. But I think we can agree that a collection of data sets that is controlled by an organization as the result of past events and from which future economic benefits are expected to flow and is material to stakeholders, then you've got the essence of something that looks and sounds like any other type of asset that sits on a balance sheet. So I think your analogy and comparison is a fair one with that accounting standard definition of what is an asset. If you really believe that data sets can generate expected benefits in the future, and I think most of your listeners, most of your audience, what we were discussing earlier, says, yeah, I think we can put a value on it. We've said it's important, and we can create a line of sight between revenue increase, risks mitigated, cost controlled, reputation improved, that you are dependent on data for. So I think there is a good case for putting it on a balance sheet. If we're saying it's not material to stakeholders and it's not worth the cost of managing it, then why do we put so much time into worrying about it and creating a whole profession of data leaders to do something about it, would be my argument. It either has value or we should just accept it's free and there's no cost to it and there's no upside to it. I'm being deliberately provocative. But I think more importantly, I think a campaign to put data assets on the balance sheet would distract us from actually achieving the benefits you were talking about earlier from data valuation, which is all about, you know, what data really are we most dependent on and how do we invest the right amount of management time and attention in really making them fit for purpose so that the organization can do what it needs to do to delight its customers, work with its supply chain and so on. How's that for a politician's answer?
Yeah, I was just going to say that fence must be pretty comfortable, but
my answer is no, we're not on a campaign to put data on the balance sheet, but I can see it being a logical extension that once accounting standards do catch up and enough people are putting a value on data, then I think it's a logical conclusion.
I mean, the only reason I asked the question, Simon, as I said, because when I get into this debate straight away, like when you use that analogy, the immediate fireback is, well, is there a company that's done that? And I'm like, no, that's not what I'm saying, you know. So it's just an analogy to kind of draw people's attention to which variation of the word value we're actually talking about. Yeah. Right? So I know at your event earlier this year, which I was delighted to speak on the panel at, your team presented an amazing presentation about, you know, what we know about the value of data, which was, you know, a research project that Anmut had conducted. Mm. I know there were some headline stats that came out of that. Are you able to share what those are?
Well, thank you for referencing it and saying it was amazing. I can't take any credit for it. It was very much down to our resident rock star head of research, Dr. Alex Coleman, and his team for all the hard work that they did. But I've been somewhat sworn to secrecy on this one for the time being. What you heard at the event and some of the invited guests was a sneak preview and a bit of a trailer of the kind of the raw research outputs, which I suppose to give the teaser, it points towards how important we think data valuation will be to all organizations, to governments, to economies in the future, especially if you imagine a world where all data has a quantified value, both internally to the organization, but also externally. And that's something that we see a path towards. I know it might sound a bit fanciful to others, and we're a long way from it if we're not talking about putting data as an asset on the balance sheet yet. But it's where we see the world moving to. So, yeah, I won't go into the stats of detail, but if there is interest, I can absolutely ask Alex to come and talk to you about it. And once we're ready for the full market release, yeah, keen to share that with your audience as well.
Okay, cool. So it's a kind of keep watch exercise at the minute. There's going to be
something. It's coming, yeah.
Okay, cool, fine. Well, we can make sure that we promote that when that eventuality arises. Couple of things that I want to finish on then. So I know obviously you've touched upon kind of highways being the major case study, and you know there's been a lot of other examples of that. So I don't want to kind of go too deep into that. But I guess in terms of just the headlines of some of those case studies, I guess, are you able to kind of, I want to use the word quantify, I don't know whether that's the right word or not, but has there been kind of, are you able to kind of articulate what the tangibles have been for those businesses in terms of that have gone through this exercise, and I guess the, you know, the benefits that those businesses in particular have seen from that, or what, you know, what the outcome has been, shall we say?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, you referenced the work with Davin and his team at National Highways, and that's a collaboration and an ongoing partnership with his team and increasingly other functions within the organization as well, interestingly. So we've been in on the ground for the best part of 5 years now. So I don't want to put people off there in terms of the length of the time it takes to get you to benefits, but there is a journey to go on from first valuing the data, working out what the priorities are, to then actually seeing the return. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, within 3 months we can deliver X million pound a benefit there. But you do identify some early wins in terms of efficiency savings when you see multiple teams in the organization, all with their own version. So kind of this multiple version of truth rather than single version of truth of key data assets. And so there's an immediate rationalization benefit if you can see all of those teams using fundamentally the same data asset, but for just their unique purposes, then that standardization, centralization benefit is quite easy to identify through the method. And also, we've prevented on a couple of occasions technology being used as the solution. So, oh, system A doesn't work. Let's go and purchase system B at a high price tag. When you actually dig into it and say, well, what are you trying to do with system B? Fundamentally, it's because the data that you've got today hasn't been collected, hasn't been organized, isn't been exploited in the way it should be. So if you were to fix the upstream business process rather than investing in a new bit of kit, then you can save yourself some money there. And that adds up very quickly into the millions of pounds on that sort of both process standardization and technology rationalization side of it. But then also, if you can get to a point where you can show the business, if we use the data differently, think about reactive maintenance as opposed to predictive maintenance, you can actually model the amount of money, operational expenditure that you can save year on year, which very quickly adds up to hundreds of millions of pounds over a 5-year funding cycle. But again, you've got to help the business implement the changes they need to implement. So we're on a few of those sorts of journeys, not just with Highways, but with other organizations. That there's a bunch of case studies on our website that I'll just give a plug to, where you can sort of see how getting to the prioritization conversation then helps you focus limited data management capability in the right places with the business to help them change their people, process, and technology.
I think that's kind of really the essence of the message that we, you know, probably want people to take away from this. It's kind of not, you know, a valuation of your data asset for the sake of valuing the data asset. And, you know, that just being an interesting thing to do, right? It's then the flow through of that to help you prioritize, allocate capital accordingly, that then drives some kind of top line based on using the data, right? Which is, I think, important so that people don't trip up over the differences between the two efforts, really.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
So last thing then, obviously a lot of your work is going in helping businesses from a consulting lens. I know that you are in the midst or have recently launched a product that kind of supports this valuation asset management work that you do. Just give us an insight into that product, kind of what it is, who it's for, you know, why now it exists, you know, why have you decided to launch a product alongside the consulting arm?
Thank you for mentioning it. So we've launched Grace. Why is it called Grace? Well, Anmut, translated from German into English, means grace or elegance. So that's a connection, a bit of a nod to Herman, our co-founder, who we mentioned earlier, passed away. It was important to him, the name. So yeah, our product is there, as you described, to support clients to implement the strategic data asset management practices for themselves. Long term, we see it as sort of the co-pilot and the business intelligence provider to data leaders, but also to business leaders as well, to help them understand which data is impacting their objectives, their outcomes, their personal incentives for that matter. Both in terms of the value of that data and the fitness for purpose of that data. And the first component of the product is, I'm going to say it, it's a data asset management maturity assessment. And I can already hear the groans from the audience going, another maturity framework. What I would say is that nobody ever started a journey without first knowing, you know, where they are today, identifying what's important, what's most urgent, what's most important to address. And the feedback that we've actually been having, which has been really heartening to us, because we're on a journey here as well. It's sort of version one of this thing, is that both data and business leaders have been overwhelmingly positive. We're hearing that they haven't seen anything else like it on the market, certainly in terms of the way that we're connecting the data assets to the dimensions of organizational maturity, data management capability maturity, and then also back to business outcomes and goals. So hopefully you can sort of see what I've been describing around that line of sight between business outcomes, objectives, and the data, that dependency, we're building that into the product as we go. And so, yeah, it's a first version. We're keen to get feedback on it, constructive feedback on it, and challenge, frankly, because we don't want to build something that isn't going to add value and be able to be used by clients in a self-service way, because we feel it's a capability that our clients should own. They shouldn't have to come to a consultancy like us to do this for themselves. It's an important asset. They should have the capability to manage it, and the product is part of enabling them to do that.
Awesome. Yeah, makes perfect sense. I guess if people want to kind of learn more, Simon, I know obviously if visit your website, just plug Anmut into Google and you can pull that up, I'm sure, and there's case studies on there and stuff like that. But if anyone's kind of keen to understand a little bit more, are you happy for people to reach out? LinkedIn, is that the best way?
Yeah, 100%. There's a book a demo thing on the website as well, as you'd expect, so you can see it and play it before you're a bit apprehensive about coming and speaking to new people. But yeah, I'm my door's always open. I'm keen to build my network, our network, and see how we can help as many people as we can.
Yep, nice. Well, look, thank you so much for giving up your time, coming on the show, Simon. Hopefully, you know, this keeps spreading the word a little bit more about the, you know, the great work that you're doing. And yeah, I appreciate it and look forward to seeing what comes next for yourself and Anmut.
Thanks, Carl. Really appreciate it. Great to talk to you.
That's it for this episode of Driven by Data, the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back next week speaking with another thought leader from the world of data and analytics. Until then, please follow Orbition Group on social media if you've not already done so, where you'll be able to subscribe and therefore be made aware of the podcasts as they arrive. And please share, like, and leave reviews so that more people from our industry get to hear and benefit from these two. If you've got any questions or you want to suggest ideas for topics or potential guests, then please feel free to reach out to me. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week.